Franklin had participated in two hearings, filed three briefs. The docket information and how to review the docket is on the Common Council packet. The primary request from Franklin was to the Public Service Commission to deny the application without prejudice, primarily because the potential of Waukesha also being served by the Oak Creek Water facility was very close and closer every day, and that could have a substantial impact and potential rate reduction for Franklin as a wholesale customer, which would trail down to Franklin's retail customers. Frankly, from day one, I extended communications in writing, on the telephone, in person, and that continued throughout the case. Made telephone calls the day of Franklin's intervention filing. I believe that was last August 19th, 2015. And that continued through the June 21st Great Lakes Compact approval for Lake Michigan water diversion to the city of Waukesha. Discussions are continuing. Our understanding is that Waukesha is negotiating with the Oak Creek Utility at this point in time for such service. And there have been meetings and communications continue. And the bottom line on my end of the City of Franklin, government, water utility, and Common Council is let's all work together to make this better in the future and forever. So that's what we're trying to do, and it's one step at a time. See what transpires with service to Waukesha.
So to boil it down into a shorter sentence, Oak Creek wanted to add a whole bunch of things to their plant, $30 million bucks to do it. The ratepayers, us, would pay for a percentage of that, even though they said they wouldn't. The PSC said it would be about 30% on your water bill. So you all get your water bill. You understand what 30% would do. We intervened and, in essence, won the case. And now we're working with Oak Creek and Waukesha to come to a different solution that's better for all of us and will keep our rates down, hopefully. And the city engineer and the city attorney just did yeoman's work on this project. It was, and the finance director, excuse me. It's untold hours to make this happen, and it's very important for you, our constituents, and the ratepayers, that we intervened and were ultimately successful. Alderman Taylor.
Are we done with this? We're done with this item? We don't need to make a motion, so I thought you were is that how you're closing it up?
Nope.
I would like to take up 14 real quick to get our health director out of here because there's no reason for him on something like that. Now make a motion. I'm going to read it in.
Item 14, a motion to direct the contact to administer the retail food and recreation programs for the Wisconsin agriculture.
A motion to request.
Sanitarian.
Authorize the Director of Health and Human Service to sign the contract of administrator of the retail food and recreational programs for Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection.
Second.
All right, who do you want to give it to?
Let's
give it to me.
10 and 11?
I gave him.
Shit.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries.
Got it. Do you want to go 10 and 11?
Item G10. Resolution to amend the contract for John's Disposal Service for collection of biohazard waste. Mr. City Attorney.
Should a council member make the motion as set forth on the action sheet? I would say subject to technical changes to the resolution and contract.
I'll make a motion to authorize the execution of the attached contract amendment with John's Disposal Service, Inc. for the collection of biohazard containers pending review by the city attorney and what the city attorney just stated.
Second.
For the audience, this saves us almost $1,000 this year and $2,000 next year and on It's a little bit of money, but as you'll see in the budget, it's big money. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item G11, resolution for an agreement with Healthcare Waste Management to remove medical waste. The city attorney, same.
Same recommended, subject to technical corrections to the resolution and contract vis-a-vis the standard city boilerplate terms.
Resolution, I'll make a motion to authorize the execution contract with Healthcare Waste Management, Inc. for collection of biohazard containers pending review by the city attorney and what he just put on the record.
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We move on back to G2, a reconsideration of action taken September 6th. Common Council meeting to adopt a resolution approving the project plan and establish boundaries for the creation of Tax Incremental District Number 5. I'll point out to everyone involved that this is serious business. We're talking lots of money and a lot of work behind this. So Alderwoman Mayer has outlined her questions below. I've asked staff to take a look at it. Mr. Hertzberg.
Yeah, sure. So there were a couple items that were outlined as part of that, including a question about waste outside the original fill. Just so it's understood, since my time started working on the project about a year ago, it's been common knowledge, both among city staff as well as members of the development team. My understanding in conversations with the development team is that the waste delineation and soil reports more or less confirmed what they already knew about the site. And so we'll continue to learn more as they work through their DNR and county approval processes. But as we understand it at this time, it doesn't have an impact on the project plan. So I just wanted to clarify that point. There's also some question about
question? It doesn't have an impact on which project plan?
The project plan that was brought forth to the Common Council for action.
So the large indoor facility, it does not have an impact on that.
The boundaries of the waste, as it was defined. The question about the large indoor complex, if you go back to the original PDD application, it actually states that it's a multi-purpose indoor-outdoor sports recreation facility with connected and or separate physical structures. Furthermore, they anticipated that this building may evolve into two or more separate buildings with the indoor-outdoor activities. So, it started off in the rendering as a large indoor complex. And then back in January when the concept review came forward, prior to the April 4th meeting where the zoning and plan approvals were put in place, they refined the building to more of an L shape. That was based on knowledge from historic aerials and otherwise about where the fill boundary was. So they modified it. At that time, they anticipated, and it was part of their stated proposal at that time, that it may evolve into two or more separate buildings with indoor or outdoor activities. It was anticipated since that time that that was a possible change that could be made. When we worked on putting together the project plan, it was known that it could either be one large facility or a facility made up of smaller elements. So those numbers that were incorporated in the project plan reflect that's the valuation that's expected, regardless of whether it's one large facility or potentially three smaller elements, which was the last version of it that I've heard. There's also a question about removal of townhouses and one of the apartment complexes. This item in particular actually was in some ways instigated by the city. Elected officials and city staff had asked the development team to work with the bordering neighbors to refine the site plan to accommodate their interests when possible. In conversations with the neighbors to the west, particularly in the Stonehenge development, there was a decision to remove the townhouse structures to create a larger setback from the neighborhood, to increase that buffer zone, and to push the development further to the east. The number of units overall has nominal change. They originally planned for up to 303 apartments south of Rawson. The most recent version of a site plan I've seen so just 300 units. So it's a change in 3 units. There has been some confusion on this point that I want to clarify now. The Ehlers report states 403 units for the entire project. That's the entire project area, both north and south of Rawson. There are 300 units planned south of Rawson and another 100 units as part of the mixed-use sports village area. So imagine that as likely retail stores, restaurants on first floor with apartments up above in that area around what is now Crystal Ridge Drive and those DOT lands that have been acquired by the development team. So they're looking to add about 100 units there and about 300 units south of Rawson. So the total number of units stated in the project plan and continues to be approximately 400 units. So there's no expected change to the valuations of those structures overall, as they were stated in the project plan.
I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second.
Sure.
You just said something that is extremely important, extremely important. This project plan is a tax incremental financing plan. It is not a project plan for development in terms of planning and site development. Is that not correct?
Correct. And I'd add, go ahead.
So the wording inside of it that relates to individual elements is not as important, it's very much less important than the dollars attached to each component. You put in $10 million facility, change that facility, and it's still $10 million. It's no difference in terms of the project plan for a TIF. You propose 300 apartment units at a building value of, $60 million, and then cut that down by 50 but increase the building value, no harm, no foul. Similarly, if you take a project that's estimated at $100 million and work with the developer to get the project to $110 million, just by increasing the building values, you're dollars ahead. So it's got nothing to do with the individual makeup of the buildings and that narrative. It's got everything to do with the values of the project. Mr. Hertzberg.
The only point that I would add on top of that also is that any changes, the development process is an iterative process. As you learn new information, you make refinement. As the city helps the development team understand the PDD approvals, they will make refinements to the project and the expectations of the individual components. You know, there were a whole host of conditions that were laid out as part of the PDD amendment. Each of those conditions, when plans are formally submitted to us, they go through a review process. And whether it's the staff, plan commission, or council level that gives feedback, they'll make refinement to those elements. But at the end of the day, any suggested changes by the development team in terms of the site plan or other elements are and will continue to be subject to the PDD approval and the conditions that were applied to that approval back in April. So I know that there are a number of changes that have been discussed related to site plans, relating to building makeup. But as in terms of impact to the project plan, we don't expect them to have impacts here on the financial side of it. They can move elements, they can move roads, they can move buildings around, and that won't impact the numbers in the project plan. Those changes, when they are formally submitted to the city, will go through review for the PDD to ensure that they meet the conditions set forth in the PDD. So I just wanted to make sure we clarified some of those points, but happy to answer any other questions there might be.
Alderwoman Mayor.
Well, when you're saying that there is not going to be any effect on the project plan and the numbers, if you are taking into consideration that most of the property north of Rawson Avenue could be denied development at all, you're taking out quite a significant amount of the value of the project. In addition to that, you're also, in effect, making a TIF district that is mostly residential. which is exactly what we did not want to do on 27th Street when the concept review came in, and the guy said, I want to build these apartments. I have, you know, some ideas for some commercial property. And we all said, no, you need to refine the commercial property and make sure that that is going to be, you know, something that we can show the residents that we're actually doing a TIF district for commercial property for the improvement on 27th Street. Every one of us said no to that guy and told him to go figure out the commercial part. But on this one, we're going to sit here and say, okay, let's go ahead and approve the TIF, but we might not get anything in commercial property because the DNR is going to deny the whole thing. So I guess where's the double standard here? Why are we having a double standard on this particular one? Why are we moving this forward? And the only reason that I know of that we did that vote at that time, 2 weeks ago, is to capture some increment. And I don't think that it's necessary to capture that increment. If the TIF is that dependent on that increment, whatever that number may be, which we never got any answer on, Paul, okay, and Aaron, we never got any answer on what the difference is between January 1, 2016 and January 1, 2017. You couldn't tell me even now.
I can't. The project plan.
But why weren't we given that option to know that? Why are we being pushed to create a TIF before we have the commercial element figured out?
The plan approvals were granted April 2nd. After that time, or excuse me, April 4th. After that time, we started working on the next phase of the project, which was the TIF conversation. It was moving on a trajectory to be brought forth around this time. When we were in conversations with the consultants and others, we realized that there was this opportunity to capture the year worth of increment. It was never suggested that the development or the TIF feasibility was dependent on that increment. But we as staff felt that if there's an opportunity to capture any amount of increment, it helps to mitigate the city's risk in the TIF. So we said, look, we're working on this timeline anyways. Let's see if we can't continue our conversations in such a way that we can position the council to take action, if they so choose, prior to September 30th. That's why we did that. We explained that to you and offered you that option.
I'm going to directly answer the questions. First issue was the timing of the TIF, and it's exactly right. It's a good business decision to capture whatever additional increment you can that's free as quickly as you can. Two, passing the TIF as you did unanimously merely puts the financing mechanism in place but does not borrow a nickel, nor does it send out a nickel. No expenditure. So in your scenario, if the DOT or the DNR says, not going to build on this site, no harm, no foul. Council action sheet says disband TIF 5, we're done. No harm, no foul. But if you don't have it in place, first of all, you're being disingenuous to a developer who, on a number of occasions, got unanimous votes, plus a vote that said, this will take a priority. You all recall telling me, this will take a priority. July 2nd, 2015, I believe.
No, is that so? Right? I think I came back by then.
So I go back to the original statement. This is a financing plan, and there is no issue until a bond is issued where we're committed to anything. And it's all about the bottom line here. The higher the value, you've all heard this a million times. It's the principle on the business part. The higher the value, the better it is to pay off the TIF faster. That's the goal. And then the higher the value, the more long-term taxes are generated for the benefit of the community. So there is no interest here in reducing the dollar amount of the TIF, of the development in the TIF. As a matter of fact, we're going to work hard to increase the value of the development, because that's the way you pay off a TIF faster. Mm-hmm. Alderman Mayor, and then Alderman Taylor.
Aaron, Mayor, Glenn, Joel, anybody correct me if I'm wrong, but this was approved in April. This project was approved to go forward in April. All of these things were known then. Approving the TIF gives us the leverage. Just like Jerome said, it gives the city leverage. We're not going to have the air and water quality monitoring if we don't have the TIF, if we don't have the leverage to work use against these folks. We won't have the payment in lieu of taxes on the non-taxable property if we don't approve the TIF. We won't be able to support the improved enhanced gas collection system. We won't have the degree of control in the parking requirements or the traffic control or the oversight of the waste movement or the cooperation between the development and apartments. The apartments are going to go through with or without the TIF. There's no doubt about that. This council changed that zoning. That's going to happen. They said they can't do it. Somebody will do it. That's a gold mine, and that zoning won't change. It won't change back. I voted no. That was one of the main reasons why I voted no, but this approval was given then. So you're damn right the city is going to participate in the payments to make sure that the neighbors are protected, that the neighbors get what they need, that traffic and noise and air and water quality is monitored. This was all in April. This is the TIF. All right, thank you.
Alderman Taylor.
Well, thank you, Art. I just want to, for the record, Your Honor, I don't like when people speak for me. And so regarding the Zilber groups, when they came in for concept review, what I specifically said was I actually thought that the apartments and, you know, $25 million development for $5 million of TIF financing and flipping that and paying it off in 2 to 3 years was a good idea. On top of that, what I also said, and when they were making the phone calls to see where we all stood and wanted to talk to us, I said, but I would prefer that the hotel package comes at the same time. That's not just a promise to do it later. That needs to be done now. The one thing that if you've talked to them, you would find out that the developer.
Zimmerman or
Zilber. Zilber.
Can you clarify that for the audience? Alderman, can you clarify which apartment complex?
This is apartments on 27th Street.
Yes.
And frankly, what I said was that would have to happen at the same time to get my support. That was my position. And if you've talked to them, you would understand that the owner of the property, the hotel, wants a really crazy number, and he thinks he has us in a position. And I said, I'm not going to pay that amount. Now, that's just me personally. So I don't like someone speaking on behalf saying we all said this, because we is like all six of us. And that's exactly what I said on the record at the Common Council meeting.
The second thing
I would say, if I would ask, is Aaron, could you explain then how the money is disseminated? Like, you know, it's $21 million. The mayor did a fine job of explaining that we're not out on anything right now. We also have what Mr. Ryan in the audience brought up at the meeting at the library was the development agreement. I mean, we still have approvals here, people. We do. And one of them is development agreement. That's the document that's going to matter the most when we put it all together. So what we've done so far, we've kept the ball rolling. We've been in good faith telling to the development team that, okay, now you can start spending money to re-engineer, to redesign, to take a building that is one gigantic building and turn it into three. Maybe it's going to be four. Who knows? But it's still $10 million. The mayor did a very good job of explaining that. So yes, we've kept the ball rolling, and we've done good faith. And now the developer knows that if everything works out, if DNR and DOT and all the approvals are necessary, there's a meeting. I'm having a meeting on Friday with the county executive. So if everything continues to move forward, then we get to the point where in all the – what, there's 40 different approval or, like, conditions of the PDD. Those have to be – they're not all done yet, and those have to keep on moving. But that's what we did 2 weeks ago. Nothing's changed. Nothing has changed. But the development agreement, that's what's going to matter, and that's where we put into place the pilot and exactly what the pilot's going to be. Mm-hmm. That's where we put in exactly what the air and water monitoring will be. Maybe we don't have the dollar amount, but we know who's going to do it, how often it's going to be done. That's the reality here. So there's a lot of misinformation. I mean, to hear it, continually twisting the facts is definitely annoying, but that's okay. I'm by now used to it. So could you explain how if we move forward, how the developer...
I would ask for the courtesy of a response to that.
Oh.
Is there a motion to suspend the rules?
Motion to suspend.
Is there a second?
I mean, I have the floor, Your Honor.
Is there a second? Sorry, Ron.
That speaks volumes.
Alderman Taylor?
Thank you, Your Honor. Explain how the money is released to the development team. Like how, when they'll get it at different phases. They don't get, here's $21 million, we're giving it to you, do what you want with it. Explain how this works once the project, once everything's approved.
Sure.
That's not known, obviously, by what I've heard tonight.
Yeah, and to that point, the specifics of that will get laid out in the development agreement. And we'll expect that there will be, you know, think of it as sort of breakpoints that push action forward. But more or less, the front end of it is what's looked at as government obligation bonds, about $11.6 million for that. That's that money is targeted towards infrastructure associated with the project, and that's the first money that gets paid back, right? So the first increment that gets created goes to pay that off, to mitigate our risk, right? And we're putting those dollars in. Generally speaking, the city can finance at a lower rate than the private sector. Would the money
from the state-owned land, the reason why we started on, made the decision before September 30th, would that money go towards?
So
the reason why we made a decision before September 30th, there's a perfect example right there. And we just heard the mayor tonight talk about, we did something tonight in a very, $1,000. And when we talk about our budget, $1,000 means something. Well, this is no different. It's no different. Continue, please.
Yeah, sure. And then there's also the development incentive that helps to fill a gap in the development, right? The difference between the project costs and what's a reasonable rate of return, and that's generally defined in our conversations with Ehlers, and they're doing additional analysis on that for us, as what makes the project bankable, right? How do when a developer carries forward a project, they look for financing for it. There's a gap in this case between what the project will cost and the rate of return necessary to get it financed. So they'll help us continue to do that evaluation. Within the project plan, it's laid out in sort of two phases, and those are called municipal revenue obligations. For those following along, I'm on page 23 of the project plan. The first set of that
37 in your binder
is in associated with phase four, looking at the financing costs associated with it, your net issue of 9.26, rounding up, in 2017, and then in 2020, another $1 million plus that's associated with phase five of the project, which is the hotel component that we're expecting to come online after other elements are in place. So that issue there is subordinate to the government obligation bonds. The first money that comes in from the new increment will go to pay off the GO bonds. If there's additional funds left over, it would go towards this development incentive. And I'll reiterate, it's been said many times already, that money only gets paid to the development team if it is available. If enough increment is created such that we can make our payments towards the GO bonds, and there's additional money left over, it can go back to that gap. It's often referenced as a pay-as-you-go because it's paid as the increment becomes available. So that's set up in there. And then the last column, if you're moving to the right in 2031, this is part of an agreement that we've laid out with the county. There's some work on the methane system that would be required is associated with this project. It's something that the county is responsible for. It's not something they would undertake in the time frame necessary to accomplish this project. So we have a working understanding with them that they would pay for that up front with the possibility for return, again, subordinate to our government obligation bonds at the local level. We would pay them back for some of those costs at the back end of the TIF. if those funds are available.
Thank you for laying out the facts, because I think that's
important.
The other
point I want to add, if I can have a second, as opposed on the issue of the air and water quality monitoring stuff, we did increase the administration costs associated with the project plan by about $180,000. Anticipating there's going to be some costs associated with it. We didn't know exactly what it was going to be, but we figured there was an ability to add some of those funds in without substantially changing the project plan as it was originally presented to you, not pushing out any further years. We said, look, let's go ahead and add this administration fund in right now. Covers us in some regard related to that.
Is there a motion regarding this matter?
Motion to reconsider.
So your motion is a motion to reconsider the action taken. I mean, this is important stuff, folks. A motion to reconsider action taken on September 6, 2016 to adopt a resolution 2016-7222, a resolution approving the project plan and establishing boundaries for and the creation of a tax and criminal district number 5, City of Franklin, as amended. There's a motion. Is there a second? Is there a second to that motion? Is there a second to that motion? Hearing none, motion dies due to lack of second. Move on to item G3.
Excuse me, Mayor.
Yes. Alderman Mayor has left her seat at 7:50. Item G3, an ordinance to... you folks may not want to leave for this item. This is the sign item. Okay, move on to G3, an ordinance to amend 15-304 Unified Development Ordinance, essentially for signage at the Rock Sports Complex. There's one of two motions. The Plan Commission has recommended denial. Is there a motion regarding this matter?
Move to support the Plan Commission's recommendation.
I'll second.
That would be a motion to deny Ordinance 2016, an ordinance to amend 15-3 of the Unified Development Ordinance, PDD 37, Rock Sports Complex, pertaining to the request to allow additional signage on the ballpark fencing. Discussion. Yeah,
question
Taylor.
For staff. What staff member is handling this item? Joel?
Question.
Yeah. I've read the report and everything. I understand where you're coming from. What have we done? This is obviously a unique situation compared to anything else we have. This is a PDD. It's going to be a big project. We have other things coming. We have a stadium that, you know, that's going to be built with a large wall, I'm sure, or something. Are we going to review our sign ordinance and take into consideration this is something that is unique? I mean, I understand that some people don't like it, but this is also, you know, a part of a business plan. You know, am I crazy that the sign points out of the community? Not really, but does that mean that's the only option that they would have?
Nope.
How are we going to handle this? Because it is, you know, unique.
I can only speak for staff, but I have told the applicants from the very beginning that I would be open to the idea of something like this in the context of the entire ballpark commons.
Right.
So, you know, to try to oversimplify it, if staff was very impressed about the quality of signage and they weren't going crazy with the amount of signage, I would be very flexible on these kind of issues, maybe even to the extent of what they're asking for today at that one location.
Right.
On the other hand, yeah, if the quality of the signage looks terrible and it's posted everywhere, then staff probably would recommend no again.
And when you had that conversation with the developer, you know, or those that represent the Rock, what was there?
That was, it's all well and good, but they wanted something now. And I think it was pretty obvious as well, because they've told us previously on a previous banner, they're getting paid to keep this thing up until their contract expires. This allowed that process to stretch out. They're getting payments for having that banner up. And I warned them to that effect that this is common practice by staff, that if you apply for a changing of the regulations to allow this while something was not allowed, was in violation of the current rules and regulations, but it's not health or safety related, we'll let you keep it there. That's a current staff practice. Council can change that. Council might not like it, but that's current staff practice. We let them know that too. They were comfortable with that. That's the route they chose to go through this PDD.
So
I've let them know if the council says no, they'll have a day or two to take it down. If not, we're going to court.
Right. So then what is and we know how long that takes. You know, once we put a citation out there, then we go back in 10 days. So now you're looking at 20 days, and then you go to court, and then the judge can give them time and to remove it or to work with. I mean, so it could be up there for still a few more months, because, I mean, that's how it works. We all have complaints that we file in this city. We know how long it takes. So we can expect that. So when those that leave the room, you know, jumping up in the air feeling that they have a victory, the reality is it's going to be up there for a little bit of time.
Well, that's not entirely fair, because the applicant has agreed to that.
Or they can just take it down, and that's fine too.
Which would be the good faith thing.
Which would be the good faith thing. They could choose to do that. So what's the plan then to actually look at the entire facility, the entire development, and figure out, because this is different than anything else we have. And so that's correct. Why, you know, I don't understand why you would, I mean, we talk of driving through a city, you can see where there's sign violations. You know, have people putting billboard trucks on, I'm not going to say where, to, you know, for reasons, but this happens. We know it. It's still there. Okay. Is it because someone didn't file a complaint? I'm guessing that's maybe the case, you know. So when are we going to address this situation?
The ball is in there. Should probably not use that.
And that's not, and that's actually fitting, so you can use it.
I need a little clarification. Citywide or Ballpark Commons?
Ballpark Commons wide, because this is not a citywide issue here. Where else do you have a something that large that you're going to put? Northwestern Mutual going to hang a banner like that on their wall?
In my staff report, I mentioned that staff, again, primarily me, I do believe that Ballpark Commons is unique enough
to
potentially justify this. The Rock by itself, no, because it's too similar to some other stuff. And essentially, and I've mentioned this to them, like all other elements of this PDD, it starts with them. They give us some kind of preliminary proposal, and that'll get the ball moving.
Okay.
I expect that to come at some point in the middle of the project. So while they're putting together their site plans and special uses for the stadium, the indoor sports facility, and the first couple apartments, I expect somewhere in that middle of that process is probably when we're going to get the first draft of a signed package, but that's my guess. Okay. I mentioned that, and they didn't disagree, but I think it's too early for them to know for sure, but that's my guess.
All right.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Been moved and seconded to deny. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. 4 ayes, no noes, 1 absent, 2 absent. And move on to item G4, resolution. Is there a motion to table the resolution for a preliminary?
So moved.
Second.
All those this is to when, Joel?
No date certain.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. G5, similarly, an ordinance to rezone. Is there a motion to table?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying
aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All of those votes are 4 ayes, no noes, 2 absent. Move on to the fun thing of the night, G6, presentation of the mayor's budget for 2017, Mr. Liberta. And where'd everybody go? This is the fun stuff.
They've been waiting all year for this, and now they're going to miss it.
Found the torches.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to present tonight the mayor's recommended 2017 budget. This is the next major step in the budget process. The budget itself is a financial plan for the coming year, and it reacts to and incorporates the initiatives that the Common Council has already identified during the course of this year and previously, and addresses outside influences and requirements. A lot of those come from state mandates and things like that. And the goal was to maintain at least a status quo for departmental operations. A primary factor, an initiative that drove this budget, was the city's recent history of municipal property tax freezes that resulted in a steady reduction in the municipal tax rate. I mean, that schedule right there is pretty impressive to look at. The city last increased its total municipal property taxes in 2013. So three zeros and a $42,000, compared to the allowable amount that the city could have taxed under the property tax limits. And we've pursued that strategy while already being in an enviable position relative to our municipal peers. By municipal peers, I'm looking at what the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance, an independent group, has identified as our sort of peer groups, which is communities, 24 different communities between 30 and 150 in population. And we have the fourth lowest tax rate out of that group. So we've done very well over the years relative to tax rate. When you put that in perspective, the zeros in that 42 and what we'll talk about soon, you can look at the 5 years prior to that, 2007 through 2011, and you can see there is a very significant difference in taxes. Taxes were averaging an increase of about $600,000 per year just to maintain current operations. And so we've been obviously dramatically below that since that time. And while we've had this period of limited levy growth, we have actually pursued some initiatives that added costs. We've added an economic development director. We've added an information technology director. There was partial funding for a new light equipment operator. And at the beginning of that time in 2014, they refunded a vacant police officer position that had been unfunded but authorized for a number of years.
Let the record reflect Alderwoman Mayer's return to her seat at 7:58.
So that pattern of revenue constraints while having operational expenditure growth, even though it was limited for Franklin, isn't sustainable in the long term. So we've basically been sort of tightening the belt ever more each of those 4 years. The proposed budget does recommend incorporating the new allowable property tax associated with new growth. The allowable amount of municipal property tax that's included is $110,500. We have a growth rate anticipated at 0.63%, so less than 0.75%. We're required by the state to back out some increased revenues that we get from for public fire protection fees. So that leaves about 0.58, I believe, in or 0.54, just over a half a percent that it could allow to grow, and the amount included is the $110,500. One of the reasons we've been able for the last number of years to keep the property taxes at zero is because the city has been moving property tax that was dedicated to the debt service fund over to the general fund and capital funds. So the debt service fund relinquished $250,000 in property tax revenue since 2013 that we've repurposed in these other funds, which is one reason they were actually able to have those property tax freezes. Unfortunately, and this budget does the same thing, the amount of levy necessary to fund existing debt goes down by about $200,000. We do repurpose that again this year. Unfortunately, the remaining level of property taxes in the debt service fund necessary to support expenses, we've sort of bottomed out. So after this year, after 2017, that continued reliance by the general fund and other capital funds on transfer property taxes out of the debt service fund isn't possible. So that well has gone dry as of this budget. It's been tapped since about 2007, and it's at the bottom now. But since the debt service cost did go down for 2017, that strategy was continued to be employed in this budget. One of the things that we made sure to include in this budget is activity relative to TID 5. In order to move that forward, you do have to have appropriations in place. The Common Council, based upon the resolution for creation of the TID, gave us some indication of what to make sure we could, at a minimum, anticipate. It doesn't mean these expenditures have to be made just because you appropriate them, but it positions the budget to be able to do it.
Let the record reflect Alderman Barber's left his seat at 8:02.
So included in the budget, you will find
everything
related to the creation and implementation of the TID, creation of a TID 5 fund, the capital improvements projects and borrowing that Aaron had mentioned during his answer with the capital funding, including that for the assessed portions of the utilities. It does anticipate a schedule. We took the schedule of potential construction and looked at similar buildings to anticipate what building inspection fees would be included. Well, we anticipated Aaron's workload on various projects and allocated a portion of his benefits and wages to the TID. We did anticipate the need to retain, and it's included in this budget, the 0.3 FTE part-time inspector that we've had throughout this year. We've anticipated a need to retain that. And then with each TID, there's a small annual administrative services cost that allocates some of Paul's time and my time's clerk office time, only about $9,000 a year that's charged for general administrative functioning of the TID. So all of those components of having TID 5 are incorporated into the proposed budget that you'll receive when I'm done talking here.